Blog Talk Radio.
Y'all ready to ride? Now, everyday scene, dope fiends and the cops round. At any traffic stop, we could be shot down. And in the courts, it's just us. Justice is not fair.
Good evening, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to Injust Us, a show to share stories of injustice, allows listeners to share stories, ask questions, and seek advice. Each week, we feature guests who are changing the criminal justice system and or making a difference in the Black community. My name is Melinda Robertson, and I am your host and a member of the WPGR All-Female Radio Network. I'm an author, activist, mother, and grandmother from Washington, D.C. I am the founder of Black Mothers for Justice, Inc., a 501c3 nonprofit organization created to provide a safe space where mothers can learn how to cope with the hurt, pain, shame, and guilt they tend to carry. The mission is to connect Black mothers from city to city and state to state so they can stand together in solidarity against an unfair and unjust judicial system. I recently participated in a women's empowerment forum and spoke about one of the most essential things I believe is missing in the Black community today, the village. Back in the day, our mothers, grandmothers, and great-grandmothers were all part of the village. If a mother was short on rent, they held card games and rent parties to help her out. If a child did something wrong, you had the authority to check that child in the parent's absence. Then the parent would check their child again when they got home. But today, checking somebody's child can get you shot. I do not know who or what destroyed the village, but I believe we owe it to the next generation to rebuild the village. Last Friday, Black Mothers for Justice hosted the first virtual meeting for mothers of inmates, and it was amazing. The mothers were grateful for the opportunity to speak freely about the anxiety and stress they are experiencing and concerns about the coronavirus spread in the prison system. The meeting was such an inspiration to them that Black Mothers for Justice will be hosting virtual meetings for mothers of inmates monthly. The next one will be held on August 1st, so mark your calendars. Gun violence is a nationwide epidemic that is claiming the lives of innocent babies. Over the weekend, an 11-year-old boy was shot to death in D.C. His mother organized a Stop the Violence-themed cookout for the neighborhood when her baby was gunned down. In Atlanta, an 8-year-old girl was killed while riding in a car with her mother as they passed an illegal roadblock by a mob of protesters. On June 22nd, in Baltimore, a 24-year-old man shot an 8-month pregnant woman that was carrying his unborn son and her 3-year-old daughter. On June the 30th, two teenage boys ages 16 and 17 were shot and killed for simply asking a brother 19 years old how tall he was. A 20-month-old baby and a 3-year-old boy were also shot last month in Chicago. Please keep the mothers of these babies and their families in your prayers as we pray for peace amongst us. We have to find a way to get these guns off the street. Tonight's guest, Clarence Miles, a lifelong resident of D.C., is the executive director of Uniting Our Youth and has over 30 years of community service, including serving as youth counselor for Alliance of Concerned Black Men, youth counselor for Sasha Bruce, mental health counselor at Community Connection and Life Stride. He has been instrumental in implementing and partnering with the STEM and DC Summer Youth Programs, to name a few. Clarence is also the host of Clarence in the Community, a talk show that airs on DC Cable Network. It is my pleasure to welcome Brother Clarence Miles to the show. Hey, Clarence, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. How are you doing? Thank you for the introduction.
I'm doing. Oh, sure, sure. Thanks for being on the show tonight. It's definitely a pleasure to have you here.
Well, so, I appreciate Clarence, you inviting me. Yes.
Oh, definitely. So, Clarence, with these senseless killings, what are your thoughts? With all your years of, you know, working with the youth and stuff, what are your thoughts about the senseless killings of all these innocent babies that's going on across the nation?
You know, it really hurts. You know, it's a lot of pain. You know, and as you walk through the streets or you work in these communities, you just think about, well, who's next and what could you do? You know, and a lot of times that we as community workers, a lot of times we believe that we can combat this type of lifestyle. But what I found out is being a community worker for a long time, it's hard to combat something that you don't know where it's coming from. You know, you go to different neighborhoods, you get with different groups of guys, it's a different community, and you're over here, but it's happening over there. You know what I mean? So the thing about it is that, you know, it, like say it would take a village, but even with the village, you just don't know where it's coming from and what the idea, you know. There's a lot of things that our young people, they have trauma within themselves. You know what I mean? They don't like listening to adults. They don't think that you have that type of awareness. And don't get me wrong, we have a lot of good kids, a lot of good kids, a lot of good young men and women out here. But we just got a few that just feel like they just got to live that type of lifestyle and don't know how to deal with the arguments. They don't know how to deal with when they're being confronted. You know what I mean? So the best way they know how is to cut way out. You know, why shoot at something that you're not even hitting? And the person that you hit is not the person that you're shooting at. So we need a lot of help, you know, I mean, within our community at home. I always say it, at home is where it all starts from. You know, if your son, mm-hmm. 9 out of 10 times, the average one of parents knows that he is riding around in a stolen car or walking around with a gun and a pistol. The average one of us know that, you know what I mean? But we turn our head as a parent. We turn our head as an uncle or a nephew. No, we turn our head as a brother, you know, a sister. We turn our head from a lot of stuff that's happening like that and things just get out of control. Now, how can we slow it down? I really don't have a true answer because just when you think that you have an answer for that, then something else come up, you know. They're just doing it. It's senseless. Over anything.
Yes.
It probably wasn't over anything.
Wow. But, I mean, it's so many innocent babies being killed. So many of them. It's just heartbreaking. It's just heartbreaking. One of the things that I was thinking, and tell me whether or not you think that this is would be something that parents and grandparents should consider. I think parents and grandparents should start shaking these bedrooms down. Say they need to search their homes if they know that they have somebody that's 16, 17, 18 that's out here that they might suspect that's not doing anything positive. But just to see whether or not they have these weapons and stuff in their homes because they are stashing these guns and stuff somewhere. Do you think that that's something? I mean, because like you said, it starts with the home.
Can I be honest with you?
Yes.
Can I be honest with you? Kids 15, 16, and 13 and 9 years old is basically running the household in a lot of these homes. And how many grandmas you know that's going to really go check down a bedroom or their grandson or their son? How many mothers and fathers going to do that? Especially if I'm in denial. Especially if I already know that my kid is not working. He's coming in with this and he's coming in with that. I know I'm not buying him this. I know I'm not buying him that. And he or she come in with this or that and not being questioned. And it's not going to question. You know, I'm like this. I got an organization. I don't even let the kids come in my organization with their pants hanging down. I don't care how smart or how brilliant that they are. They cannot come in my center with their pants hanging down. You know, if you're going to come in my center with your pants hanging down, you need to turn around and go back out the door. You cannot come in it like that. So I do discipline at my center. And I'm the same way with my nephew. When they come around me, I'm the same way. You know, but parents today, you know, and I'm not saying all parents, I'm just saying some of the parents, they just turn a blind eye to a lot of things that their kids are doing at 16 and 17 years old, at 9 or 10 years old. They run the household, especially the father's not even really saying a lot to their kids. They're just not doing that. No.
Well, a lot of fathers not even really there.
We were coming up, and I was coming up.
I'm sorry, repeat that.
I said it's a different time from the time when you came up and I came up. And if my mama came and checked my mama put me out, I was 16 years old. I got some stuff from the street. They didn't know it, but they knew something happened at night when I got a phone call said I had to leave. And my father let me go, and when I came back home from school the next day, he told me I had to pack my clothes, 10 years old, because he knew the phone call wasn't right, and I was doing something I had no business doing, and he wasn't going to allow me to do it in this house. He put me out.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
And that's parenting. That's parenting.
Yeah.
It's like follow my rules or not. So do you think the parents are afraid of these people? Do you think they're afraid of the kids? Is that what you're saying?
Well, one thing about it, I'm going to give you this. When your parent was coming up and their parents, they always say, even like with yourself, you say, I want my kid to be a little better than me. I want my kid to have something that he don't have to go out and struggle for. So I'm going to make it a way that he can be all right and be comfortable. And guess what happens? And when you do that, you spoil your kids. You know, some kids don't even know how to wash dishes. You know what I'm saying? Some kids don't know how to take out trash. You understand what I'm saying? So they don't have no chores, you know. So how can you can't if you ask your kid to wash dishes, they don't look at you like you stole something from them. You understand what I'm saying? So and that's not all households, but I'm just talking about the household. We're talking about a lot of kids need a lot of discipline. The parents need just as much help as the kids do. I don't think parents have more problem out the one son than a parent. They had five kids, you know, because they want to be their friend. You can't be your kid's friend.
So
that's what we want to be.
So basically, it boils down to the parents when it comes to the gun violence and stuff like that in the street. Is that what you're saying? Pretty much.
Well, I'm saying that's part of the situation. I mean, quite sure. I might be one way in the house, and I might be something else in the street. But what I'm saying is, if you know that my son is constantly going out in the street and he's not doing what he's supposed to be doing, and he coming, you got to really check your kids. You don't check your kids,
definitely.
They're gonna check you. They're gonna check
you.
So that's just part of the situation. Yeah, that's the type
real.
Of life that we live in now.
Yeah. So. Why do you think the young brothers are just so reckless with the guns? I mean, because, you know, back in the 80s, the late 80s and early 90s, D.C. was at one point called the murder capital, you know what I mean? So that was the time then, and look at the time now. But during that time then, I mean, innocent babies weren't being killed compared to these brothers being so reckless. Today, I mean, do you think they're angry? What's going on?
Well, one thing, they don't have no experience when they're pulling that trigger. They don't have no experience. Second thing, like I said to you earlier, it's a lot of trauma that we go through. I always say me, I always like to add me in. I don't like to just ignore me. It's a lot of trauma that we go through as a man, as a young man. If we live in different communities, we gotta go through a lot of barriers to get to the next level. We got to prove ourselves. And that's what happened. A lot of these guys are trying to prove themselves, but they prove themselves in the wrong way. You know, some of them love to get 10 to 30 or whatever they get, you know, going to jail or doing this and doing. But I believe that if you shoot a person one time, you're going to shoot somebody else again. You follow what I'm saying? Because of the adrenaline.
Especially if you got away with it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's adrenaline. So let's get you going. You know, but I'm a good spiritual person. I think that time is going to change for our young folks. You know what I mean? You know,
wow,
but I
so
may not be around, but
been.
Time is going to change. Huh?
Wow, so much blood has been shed, though. Let me just remind callers, if you would like to join the conversation, please press 1 to join the conversation and talk to Clarence. It's just so heartbreaking, and I'm just trying to wrap my mind around what's going on. And again, like you said, it's a lack of experience. These young brothers have these guns and just out here shooting just crazy, just in the air. I just can't imagine what they're thinking. You think it's because they're lacking love? They're trying to find some direction.
Well, again, I said again, you know, it starts from home. You know, you get a lot of love at home. Don't get me wrong. Some of us don't get a lot of discipline at home. You know what I mean? Some of us, we just get pacified when we're at home. You know, if you want a pair of tennis shoes, you want something nice, I'm going to get you this, keep you from acting out on me. You know what I mean?
Wow.
The expiration date is, you know, it's gone past. The mom's still trying to. She's trying to take a boy, she's trying to make a boy a man instead of letting him learn to how to be a man. You know, they don't, you know what, they got the summer youth program. There's a lot of youths that didn't sign up for the summer youth program, and they have it every year. I'm talking about 16 or 17, 18-year-old young guys, it's not working. They have it every year, so it's not like they don't have knowledge of it. They're getting them jobs away. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that if my parents don't make me go to work or look for no job or get a job, what you think I'm going to do? Nothing. Do what I want to do.
Right.
Kids run the house today.
It is just, and that's just so sad. So I think we have a caller. Caller, are you there, caller?
Yeah, hey, how are you, my name is Abraham.
Hey, Abraham.
Hey, so I definitely... he is definitely right in the fact that this entire process starts at home. And, you know, I grew up in the city, and, you know, I wasn't always the person that I am today. So I can understand the process because I went through the process. So imagine being young. My father was in prison before I was even brought home from the hospital. I don't remember seeing my father. If I can remember back, I think the first time I saw him, I was 7 years old, and we went to Hagerstown to visit him. So basically, long story short, I never had a father in my home. My mother, trying to be, you know, the best mother that she could be for me, she worked all of the time, right? So typically, it was me being dropped off at a family member's house or, you know, one of her girlfriend's house or something like that. I could remember being dropped off at one of her girlfriend's house one day, and her girlfriend had 3 sons. Of course, it's me versus those 3 sons. You know, they feeling it this day. I got to fight them. And so you just go through this process where you start to feel like your father isn't there, your mom ain't never around. You a young kid kind of fighting for your position in life, not truly even understanding life because you're not being coached anywhere because your mom's never there, your dad's not there. You know, your family members got a distorted view. All of my cousins and uncles was all about, you know, running around with the little girls and selling drugs and all of that. So when you don't get the correct upbringing, there's a lot of anger inside of you because I didn't understand why my father wasn't there. I didn't understand why my mother kept dropping me off at all these people's houses, you know, and things of that nature. So a screwed up home life becomes now when you go out in the street, you know, and your homeboys, you know, y'all cool like that. Now you're starting to feel that love that you thought you were supposed to get at home. So now when your homeboy like, yo, bro, we about to go ride on this dude around the corner, that's your homeboy. Like, what you going to do?
Hello.
Tell him no. Hello?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's a process that starts in the household. It definitely starts there. I know I was a father to my son. I raised him from birth until he was about 13 years old. My son has never been to jail. My son doesn't drink. Well, he drinks, but he doesn't smoke any drugs. He's a D.C. firefighter, and he works for Homeland Security. He has children who he takes care of today. He's never been in jail. He ain't never done anything wrong. So it's a difference when you have that male figure in your life to rear you and guide you through life, and his mom as well. A lot of these kids don't have that.
Right, right. Right, you have a question for Clarence? Yes, go ahead.
When I was younger, and this is how things have changed. When I was younger, I had aunts and uncles. So every summer, my mother would send me to one of my aunt's house or uncle's house to stay for the summer. You know what I mean? So I started learning about my family structure. And each one of my family, like my aunt and uncle, would always give me a nugget to carry me back when I come back to Washington. So I had to really start paying attention to a lot of things that was tough. In other words, I had a place to go where somebody else could just try to help nurture me. A lot of these kids now, you can't send your kids with an uncle or aunt these days. You just got to do that. They're going to tell you, I don't want to go. And guess what the parent going to say? You ain't got to go.
Wow. It's a different time. And the thing is, I believe that they have to take back their positions as the parents in the household. I mean, I just can't wrap my mind around so many young, beautiful babies just being taken away from their by gun violence. It just incenses me. And I just believe that as a community, we need to be enraged about this. So, question, if anything, can we do as a community in the valley? I'm sorry, Abraham, go ahead. My bad. Did you have something else you wanted to say? Okay, so what, if anything, can we do as a community to end the violence?
You caused to ask that question. I think people are marching today for not only for you know, Black Lives Matter, parts of police or injustice through the system, but they also marching because of how our young people, we killing each other. Our brothers and sisters are hurting each other. You know what I mean? Just the other night, they had a march on last night. You know what I mean? And we should be all right, but we don't got numb to a situation. Each situation is different. Each person is different. Same way the police went up there and shot the lady up. They haven't got arrested yet. But then somebody could get killed over here. Then you might get a big uproar. You understand what I'm saying? So it's time, and it's about a lot of things that we are going through. I mean, I heard a brother say, if they give us more money, we can stop the killing. So I said to myself, if they give you enough money, you can stop the killing. Then the only way I know how to stop a killing if I know a killing is going to happen. Other than that, I don't know if somebody up the street going to kill somebody or not, if I'm in the house, if I'm minding my business. You understand what I'm saying? So
right,
the only way you
right.
can stop a killing, you got to know that it's going to happen. Other than that, you can't stop it. You know? So,
wow.
I mean, let's be real. You know? We got a lot of community
organizations. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You got a lot of people out there. You got a lot of community organizations like mine. You got a lot of people that's out there, that's foot soldiers, that's out there. And I guarantee each one of our organizations can tell you that we all had a loss of somebody that was close, that we didn't think that it was going to happen. Like the little boy, you know, his mother was asking, can I do something for the community? What happened? You understand what I'm saying?
Okay.
So, I mean, you know, we win on one end, we're losing on the other end. You know what I mean? The only thing we got to do is just keep trying to strive for things to get better. You know what I mean? Just hoping that these young people get a chance to save their own life, you know, because they hurting each other.
Yes, indeed. I mean, and I think that because they tend to glorify going to jail. like a lot of musicians, a lot of videos, they tend to like that's like that's like it's a rite of passage or something like that to go to jail. And I'm wondering, I'm thinking that if people really told them what's really going on behind them walls, that they wouldn't be so quick to be out here with these guns and stuff, because at the end of the day, ain't no guns in jail, Jack. Ain't no guns in jail. And they might, you know, have this whole image out here in the streets of, you know, carrying a gun. They known to be sticking people up or shooting the people up or whatever. But the reality sets in when that judge hits them with 25 to life and their manhood is on the line every single day. You understand what I'm saying? I think that because they seem to glorify it instead of telling them brothers what's really going on behind that, how they fight for survival behind them walls, maybe that would kind of like give them a different perspective in terms of, you know, carrying these guns and just wilding out like this. What you think?
Well, I'm telling you about what I do know is that we have young guys who get in and out of Caesar's Law or you can say the D.C. jail. They think it's a joke. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is if you go to jail, a lot of kids don't want to work. They don't want to do nothing, so they're having fun. They come back home, they still having fun. You know what I mean?
So they having fun in jail? That's what you're saying? They having fun in jail?
Yeah, because my homeboy's right there. We all being together. We all doing time together. You tell on me, I'm still going to be your friend. You tell on me, I'm still going to be your friend. You follow what I'm saying? So the whole atmosphere is gone to a whole different direction. You know what I mean? And guess what? Some guys who do a lot of time, you're not going to really see them because they're going to be locked up. And see, I don't believe this could happen to me until it really happened to me. You follow what I'm saying?
Wow. Were you ever incarcerated, Clarence?
Yes, I was. Yes, I was. I did time in Cedar Knoll at Oak Hill. Then from I was 17. They told me if I get in any more trouble, that they was gonna give me the Youth Act. So I stayed on the street from 17 to 27. Then I went to a federal institution, Tallahassee, Florida, where I did most of my time at. But I also was in Terry Hutt, and just as well, I was in St. Louis, Missouri, you know. And I did that during the 80s, you know. And when I came back home, I got off parole 1988. I got off the road in 1988 when I came home, you know. So, yeah, I've been locked up. And we'll make it so bad. I got locked up. I had 20 months or 5 years. I think I had about 59, like, little BAMs, what they call BAMs during that time. And I got 20 months or 5 years. And when I was doing transit, it was a guy of another color. He had about $12 million worth of cocaine and had like got caught with $2 million, and he had some marijuana, and he ended up going to a camp, and he was home before I was. So that let me know that what I was doing is not really worth it. You follow what I'm saying?
Right, right.
It wasn't really worth for me, you know, doing what I was doing, because, you know, they got away with more than we could ever get with. And this is why in the district they had split sentences. You do 20 months for 5 years, or you do 4 to 12. But now they tell you now you have to bring it all to the door. If you get 12 years, you got to do almost 11 years of it. You know, there's no parole.
Wow.
Yeah, if you'd already been paroled by 1985, 84, or 83, you get no parole. Mm-mm. You have to bring it all the way to the door. Yeah, I've been incarcerated.
Wow.
My mother did not come and see me. My father did not come and see me. I really didn't want my mother to come and see me. So I don't know. I caught a break. He asked me, I want to go to the Lord, and I want to go to the Fed. I chose the Fed because I definitely want my mother to be riding up and down the road. I knew she wasn't coming, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah. And
so
I
how much time
did you
How much time did
I
you
did
do all together?
Okay. I did 3 years, but I did the 5 year sentence on. I did 3 years inside and 2 years on the outside. But I also violated. I had some dirty urine because I was out there messing around. So the 11 months that I stayed on the street, I had to get that back to the government. Then I had to do another 11 months before I came back home.
Wow.
Yep,
wow. So, right. So when you went to prison, was that fun for you? Did you, you know what I mean? Like you say, like
well,
a lot of times, it's like
you
knew the people there.
Well, when I went to prison, you know, I think before I got locked up, I was bragging to some of my friends that I had been doing what I was doing for 20 years without catching a charge. So I really thought I was a big-time professional. You get what I'm saying? And I caught my charge on the 21st year, you know. So after I went in, you know, I felt some kind of way. I felt like it wasn't a place where I needed to be. But it could have been worse. You know what I mean? It could have been worse.
So it was a learning experience.
Say, one experience that I did never experience, when they were saying how the guys walk around in jail with their pants hanging down like that, I never experienced that. And I'd have been in the Fed zones, and I've been on in level fours and level six. You know what I mean? Because in the federal system, you go by different levels. 5, 6, 4, 3, and stuff like that. I never seen guys walk around with their pants hanging down like they do on the street right here. You know what I mean? You couldn't do that.
Really? But they don't have belts. I thought that that's where it came from.
I said I never seen it. I'm 62. I was in jail. I was doing my time. I was 27 years old.
So you guys had belts back then in jail?
We had belts. No, we had the jumps. We had belts and we had the jumps. We had the brown khakis and khakis and the khaki shirts and khaki pants. Beige.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember if we had. I can't remember if we had a belt or not. But I just know one thing.
Right,
people walk around with our pants hanging down.
Right, because I was always. I don't know where I heard that story from, was that that it came from prison because men couldn't have belts because, you know, they fear people trying to commit suicide with them, but they didn't have any belts, and a lot of times that's why their pants were hanging down. So I didn't
was hanging down when they first went in. If you go from just a cell block, right? If you come from central cell block, they might take your pants, your belt away from you from central cell block. And then if you get convicted or you have to just step back, then you got to go and your pants be falling down off you like that. But by the time you get to R&D, they're going to give you a change of clothes. You know what I mean? You just walk around and jump.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
But I never seen that myself personally. I don't think the homosexuals walk around like that.
Wow.
That's what I was going to do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, Clarence, you have 27 years clean and sober this year, right?
No, I have 27 years right now. Yes.
Oh, 27
and
years.
August
right.
would be 28 years. August would be 28
wow.
years.
Wow.
But right at the present time, I got 27 years. Yeah.
Wow. So how did you do it? I mean, did you relapse a few times, or did you just say, I'm done, and then you got 27 years straight? Or how was that process of somebody listening and they struggling?
This was the process for me. I never wanted to stop using, okay? Let me put it that way. But I had been in and out of different programs. And every time I came off the program, I seemed to go back to the places I know better and continue on using. But what happened at the time in my life, I was 36 years old. I had been using drugs. And I came home to my mother's house because I was her only son. And I wanted to come back in and get myself together. But I really didn't want to get myself together. I just wanted to come home and get me enough rest then probably steal something out the house and go do what I got to do. So by that time, I got down real, real low. The streets and all that was no more like it was, as I thought it was, right? And my mother put me out for that last time. And you remember I told you she put me out at 16. But she did not let me back in the house at 36, and I tried to come back in. So from there, a couple of days later, you had to cuss my mother out and all that, call all kind of name, be truthful. Things I was calling, I just made it all up so I couldn't have my way. That's what I'm saying about
you talking about, you're talking about,
more.
You said at 36 you called her all them kind of names because you were in your addiction?
Yeah, and I couldn't have my way. You follow what I'm saying?
Right.
So that's how I did it. That's what I'm saying. So my mother put her feet down. She didn't let me in the house. So after I cursed out and all that other stuff, about a week or two later, I got shot at my foot by way of a stray bullet over there on 16th. And when I was on 19th Street, Fuller Street, on Fendale off of W Street. And I got shot at my foot. And that's how I heard the message of the Lord, where I couldn't constantly go back and forth, you know what I mean, do it out the storm. So I end up in a shelter, because I had already been staying over the shelter anyway. So I end up in a shelter, and the health care, the homeless, some people came and asked me, did I want any help? And I told them I really didn't want no help, you know what I mean, after I got out the hospital. You know, I told them I didn't want no help, but they was telling me about what they could do for me, how they can help me get my life together and all that old stuff. So they told me I had to go they'll take me to the doctors and all that, take care of me and stuff. So they said they was going to leave the shelter. I got on and they took me to a place called Christ's House. The Christ's House changed my whole life. Did something for me I couldn't do for myself. You know, they fed me, they brought me back to life, and one, I stayed there for 97 days. Then they asked me if I want to go to treatment. And I really didn't want to go to treatment, but I told them I want to go to treatment because I had nowhere else to go. I couldn't go back to, you know, to my parents' house or nothing like that. My grandmother had died during that time. So when I went to treatment, everything was on the ups. You know what I mean? I had used drugs for 23 years. And when I went to treatment, I had to stay in treatment for 27 days, or maybe 14 days. So I ended up punching the dude in the face, and I came back home. And when I came back home from West Virginia, a lot of stuff had looked real different from me. It wasn't the same anymore. You know, the people I used to be around, I didn't no longer really want to be around them. And the things I used to do, I definitely want to do. I had found a new way of life, you know what I mean? And I thank God that I went on and grabbed hold to that new way of life. Now, when you were saying, so when I came home from treatment, you know, and if I got put out, the guys were saying, he gonna go back there on A Street, he gonna go back out and do this and do that. But what happened was I came back, I just got with the fellowship, the program, the 12-step program. And after I got with the 12-step program and being around people that I know, and everything was in history. You know,
wow.
I never looked back once I came out of treatment. I never looked back. You know, every morning I wake up, thank God for the blessing that He gave me. You know, God used and staying clean. You know what I mean? Because my life expectancy for me at 18 or 19 or 20, because that's when all of my young friends, all my young buddies, had got killed 18, 19, and 20 years old by directly for being on the streets of Washington, D.C. So I understand about some of the stuff that's going on now. But the way it is compared to where we're at now and what's happening now, it's totally different. You know what I mean? It's just totally, totally different. You know, and I thank God all the time, you know, that he spared me. And a lot of my friends are doing life in jail or doing a lot of time or in jail right now. But he spared me, and I'm very thankful for that. I never questioned, I never wondered why he did it, but I found out with me having my organization, I started working with a lot of kids around the community and stuff like that, and that's been a total big blessing for me because the kids were telling me about that I should start my own program. Because I was with an organization called Alliance for Sane Men, and I was working with them a long time and with the DC Housing Authority, and some of the kids started telling me about what they think that I could do to have my own program to help them out a lot. And I didn't think about having my own program. I'm always thinking of actually working for somebody else. You know, 12 years ago it happened. I started my own youth program. You know, I've been successful ever since. You know, I just been very thankful, very happy, you know, that we lost some on the way, but we also helped a lot on the way. You know, with this program, you know, we can't never save too many, but we definitely don't want to lose a lot. You know what I mean? So I got generations of kids that I'm working with, man. Two generations of kids that I might work with their mother, now I'm working with their children. You follow what I'm saying?
That's a blessing, and it's a blessing that your parents got to see you in your sobriety. You know what I mean? And to see how successful you are. That's everything.
My father and I was hanging out together. He used to tell me he always tell me how proud he was of me. You know what I mean? And his last day, my father died a year ago, Father's Day. You know, him and I used to go out dancing with two little cabarets and clubs. You know, because he wanted to have a nice time too. Him and I started going.
I used to see you and him hanging out. You used to bring him to the cookouts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because how old was he, Clarence? Like 90, 91, 92?
My father died, he was 92.
That's a blessing.
You know what a miracle happened when I seen him? I never seen my father go to church when I was a kid. Never, ever. But before he died, for about 5 years before he died, 3 to 4, 5 years before he died, him and I used to go to church together.
Such a blessing. Such a blessing.
Yes.
So, Clarence, how does one go from homeless, from being homeless, to becoming the executive director of Uniting Our Youth? How does that happen?
Well, again, you know, so when my mother put me out, right? Okay. I went to treatment. When I came back home, I didn't know if I wanted to work or not. So one of my first jobs that I said, well, I know a place where nobody want to work. So you got to really want to work to get this job. And I applied for a job at McDonald's. You know what I mean? Because I knew I needed some discipline. And when I went to work at McDonald's, I got suspended from McDonald's job because I didn't want to take no supervision. The supervisor was telling me that I needed to transfer the hamburger to the plate like I supposed to, instead of taking the hamburger all the way across my body and wasting oil on the floor. I didn't want to eat. And I cussed the guy out, and he suspended me. And I haven't been suspended off a job since, you know what I mean? So as I started working three different jobs, a friend of mine, St. Rico Rush, you know, I seen him working at Shouts of Bruce, and I got the job working at Shouts of Bruce. A friend of mine named Charlotte Kingsland asked me if I want a job, and she knew me from the street. And I told her, yeah. You know, and I started working at Shouts of Bruce, you know. One of those kids stressed me out. She was about 11 years old. And I said, no, this is not the job for me. You know, and trying to find out, I've been doing that ever since, you know. So I started volunteering with Rico and them, with the Lions of Discerning Men. And one day Rico said to me, man, I'm going to get you a job. So all my friends and buddy, because I kept getting these starting days with the Lions of Discerning Men. And my buddy said, oh, they lying. They ain't lying. They just lying to you. They did that same old stuff when he was in Lord. You know what I mean? But I kept the faith. You know what I mean? And
right,
I got a 90-day
right.
job
right.
with them. Yeah. I got a 90-day job with them. That 90 days, I worked with the D.C. Housing Authority for about 7 years. You know what I mean? For that 90-day, and then when housing jobs had folded from being in receivership, being the last concern, man, they took me on board because I was already in there anyway. So all I did, all they
right,
did
right.
was pay for one payroll, double payroll. And because, see, Rico told me, you know, by that I was volunteering and I was coming to find out little things about the job, he was saying that if you come and do what you need to do, so by the time you get the job, you're already going to know what to do. Is that what happened? Exactly. But it wasn't easy.
Yes, the late great Rico Rush. Man, he rest in peace. He touched a lot of lives, boy. I tell you, he touched a lot of lives. Yeah. So we wind it down, Clarence. So let me get to this. So I want to congratulate you on the Clarence Miles and the Community Show. So if you could speak a little bit about that, tell the listeners about your show that airs on DC Cable Network.
Yes. Well, you'll be my next speaker once I start back up. Clarence Miles and the Community, this is a show that we try to do on DC Cable TV. And what we like to do is introduce different people around the city about different people from D.C. doing great things in the metropolitan area. But we're going to have topics on about what we have, where we're talking about the gays, lesbians, what we're talking about, what we're talking about gun violence, or what we're talking about community actors like you is, or we're going to be talking about we're going to talk about education. We had a brother named Raymond Bell. We're talking about the IT program, different service providers. So it's going to be a wide range of different things. We're going to be doing the shows on the inside the building and also on the outside of the building. And so what we're trying to do is bring some awareness to the city about the type of work that we are doing in these communities, how we can uplift each other, but most of all, try to have a referral to somebody who might need that type of service or whatever that person is that's coming to speak to the community. And they're going to be shown on DC Cable about 8 or 9 times within a month period of time. As we continue on, I'm trying to get a weekly spot where I would come on at a certain time with a very important topic, because I don't want to say what the topic is going to be, but we're going to be doing wild ranges of topics. We're not just going to be stuck on one way how we're going to do it. We're going to be talking to different people with varieties of different things. Now, I'm going to have a couple of people lined up so far after you to continue on moving, because we want to talk to you about the injustice in the Justice Department where our kids or men are being treated unjust. So that's where you'll come in with that message with you and your son, or you and whoever that you need to bring on your panel, that we'll be able to deliver a message, a clear message, that we're making a difference here in our community. So
absolutely.
That's what's about trying to the community.
Absolutely, absolutely, because mothers are hurting. Black mothers are in a lot of pain, you know. Their children are being killed in the streets, or either they're getting unfair sentences for minor offenses. They're doing 20 years for doing that, not even a murder charge, you know what I mean? So I would definitely love to have that conversation, because I want to just be able to give them a voice, because they really have never had a voice. You know, I'm just grateful for every opportunity I get to kind of speak to the injustice. So the Clarence Miles and the Community Show, it's been on since the shutdown and since the pandemic, it's been on hiatus. So when do you expect the taping to resume?
Well, hopefully that we can do something maybe next month sometime once I get with a panel of people to see if we can see how we can social distance and still be face-to-face and interacting with this conversation. Because all it needs is like two or three of us, myself, and the person that's in the background. So see how we can work that, we can do that. Because I'm ready to move forward with that, because I got a lot of other projects that I want to go ahead and move forward to and other people. But can I say this before we get in?
Yeah.
I want to say something about Rico Rush. Rico Rush was my mentor. And I stayed up underneath Rico Rush for almost 12 to 13 years working with him. But I've also been around him for almost 26 or 22 years. And I remember Rico took me up to what they call 46th on Simple City, up on 46th and G Street. He took me up there. He said, Clarence, whatever you do, don't react. What do you mean by that? What he meant was that a young boy hit me in the head with a bucket. Right? And I was so mad, but I'm street inclined. I was so mad that I stood there and I looked at the young boy. Rico said, Clarence, go outside. I went outside, and guess what happened? when Rico came outside, I was still outside. And then I was able to come back to that same community, kind of find out that same boy that hit me with a bucket, I knew his mother and father. You follow what I'm saying? And then we built that relationship up. You know what I'm saying? See, sometimes you just can't go in these communities without having any armor or having any strategy how you go about dealing with these young people. And so that's how I ended up working with the Lions for certain men, because the job that I got, they had sent another dude up there probably before me. He went to work one day and never came back. So it's not easy working with these youth.
You're definitely going to have your work cut out for you, especially. But I
kind of was good what I was doing. I fell into this community. A lot of time I worked there by myself, but I was under the umbrella of the Lions for Concerned Men. But, a lot of time as an organization, we have to go there 2 or 3, 4 deep. But, I'm just one of the fortunate ones. But I can go there by myself.
Right.
So much of that, what I'm saying is that I've been in the street a long time, and I only last this long because of God's favor for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're definitely making a difference.
Yeah.
Definitely making a difference. Hang on, I think we have a caller real quick. Caller, are you there before we wrap up?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, come on.
I'd like to know what kind of services his center offers to children.
My center offers all types of services. I'm at Lansing Terrace and at Lidro Park. These are two communities that I serve. We do mentoring. We do after school programs. Right now we're doing the summer youth program. We do one-on-ones with the kids and stuff. But not only we just work with kids, we work with the community too. So whatever type of service that a person that need or like to have, we try to do what we need to do for them, because our service kind of stepped up. Because one time we just worked with kids 14 to 21, but we found out that their parents need help, the grandparents need help, even their little brothers and sisters need help. So it's whatever type of service or whatever type of help that we can do or guide them or get them into some type of career program. It's just according to what the individual needs is.
Okay.
Oh, excellent, excellent. We have another caller holding. Real quick, caller.
Yeah, I'm not going to say who I am, but I want to thank him for all the work that he do out here in these communities. See, what you have to do, you have to be able to know the audience that you're working with. You have to come down to their level. You have to meet the families, and you got to know your community. That's why you survive so long in those communities that you service, because then they become to trust you. So when you keep yourself embraced with that community, then no harm is going to come to you, because then they start trusting you. So that's what we don't do. People don't go out and they don't communicate. They don't go all different hours of the day and night to get to know the community that they're servicing. So when that guy left, that's because he wasn't ready to be a part of that community or to build on that community. And people think it's scary. It's not. Once you go in there and make them feel you and trust you, then you can help them to reach anything that they want to reach. And I want to thank you, Clarence, for everything that you
Thank you. Real talk.
Yeah, thanks,
Appreciate
Paul. That was good. That was good. Clarence, you're definitely making an impact in the community, Clarence, and I just commend you for all you've done and for your 30-plus years of service. Can you tell the listeners how they can contact you, how they can reach out to you?
You can reach out to me. My telephone number is 240-468-2561. 240-468-2561. And my email is unitedhouryouth1@yahoo.com. unitedhouryouth1@yahoo.com. That's unitedhouryouth1@yahoo.com. And I'm also have an office in Lansing Terrace and just as well in Lidro Park. Both of them are in the housing authority properties.
Wow. Clarence, I want to thank you so much for being on Injustice. Thank you for dropping the knowledge and being committed and loyal to our, the young people of the District of Columbia. May God continue to bless you and all your future endeavors. And thanks again for being on the show. I love you, bro.
I thank you for your invitation. And I appreciate everything that you're doing and also keep doing what you're doing. And I just want to tell you thank you and peace and love.
Peace, bro. I appreciate you.
Signing out.
Okay. Point to ponder. I commend brothers like Clarence for their commitment to our youth, because these young brothers are loose cannons in these streets today with no regard for life. They don't care about what happens to them, and they don't care about what happens to us. How can we as a community fight like hell to make sure the police stop killing unarmed black people and not fight to get the guns off the streets that's killing these innocent babies? That's a point right there to ponder. If you have a story of injustice you would like to share or would like to recommend a topic for discussion on a future show, please hit me up. I am author Melinda Robinson across all social media platforms. Next week's guest on Injustice will be the one and only Reverend Dr. Willie F. Wilson, the now retired senior pastor of Union Temple Baptist Church in Washington, D.C. He's going to stop by and drop some knowledge the way only he can. So I'm excited about that show. Thanks so much for tuning in tonight. We'll be back at it again next Tuesday night from 8 to 9. Stay safe and be blessed. Peace.
Hey, won't let it sweat you, babe.